David Eichel here, HawkeyeInsider.com. Please be joined, as always, by Sean Bock. After the Hawkeyes record back-to-back wins after falling 0-2 to start their season, Iowa has now recorded their sixth straight win over the Minnesota Golden Gophers, which is the longest winning streak for Iowa in the series history. But again, Sean, 35-7 win over Minnesota. And the Hawkeyes, I think in all three phases, especially defensively, came out with a spark. When you look back at this game, I know we're just fresh off this, maybe about an hour or so after this. But what are the first things that come to mind when you think about this game?
Yeah, definitely just dominance. I mean, this game really never felt close. I mean, you look back at a couple times in the first half when Iowa was up 14-0, Minnesota had a chance to score, but then they ended up turning the ball over. And really after that, after Iowa made it 20-0, then you really never felt any sort of danger in this game. And I think that's kind of what the expectation was coming into it. We know Minnesota, we talked about the run game, but there's just so many holes in their team. When you look at the passing game, how it really wasn't what it was last year. The defense, though they return a lot of the guys, really didn't look that good, especially in the run, which is something we kind of expected. And kind of just overall, I thought this game was really just kind of indicative of how dominant or how good really this Iowa team could be. I mean, we talk about Minnesota, how they've really struggled this year and how they're not on the same level as they were last year. But I think if you go on the road in games like this, and I mean, Minnesota has had their ups and downs this season. I mean, they killed Illinois, which I guess isn't really a lot to say. They lost to Michigan, lost to Maryland. So I think we kind of expected that Iowa would come into this game and win, but I don't think many people expected the fashion of what it was. And I think you got to tip your hat to the Iowa defense. Honestly, this group has been absolutely incredible ever since kind of the little bit of struggles against Purdue maybe, and then Northwestern here and there. Like, Iowa's defense has been absolutely spectacular. And that's against teams that, while they may not be in the top tier of the conference, they were coming off arguably their best – both teams were coming off their best game of the season. Michigan State coming off the Michigan win. Minnesota coming off that win against Illinois. So these teams felt more confident coming into the games, but Iowa's defense was really able to come in and shut things down, which was really, really impressive to me.
Yeah, Sean, I think you bring up a good point about the defense. I think it was after that 10-minute and 56-second drive where Minnesota didn't end up scoring. I had tweeted, I apologize for having more questions about Iowa's defense than their offense. And that's nothing against the Iowa offense, but the defense has just been spectacular. I think when you think about the interviews that we did a couple weeks ago, what did they harp on? They harped on communication. And Iowa has really not given up that many big plays. They've been solid in the run game. And even though there's – I don't want to say – I mean, it really is, though, a lack of stars, Sean. But the team's chemistry is just there. You see them constantly swarming to the ball. Iowa gave up 144 yards to Muhammad Ibrahim tonight, Sean. It did not feel like that. It really didn't. He got that on 33 carries. He only had one run that went for double-digit yards, and it was only 4.4 yards a carry. Iowa was swarming to the ball, and he earned every single yard of that. Jack Kerner, I think he just continues to prove why he got put on scholarship. He had the interception. He had the field goal, the 39 field goal, blocked field goal. I mean, this Iowa team, Sean, I think that they're really starting to hit their stride, and the trajectory for the defense is just going up. I think Chauncey Golston played well. Zach Van Valkenburg, I think, especially over the last 2 weeks, has played tremendous. He had three sacks tonight, and I think it was a welcome sight for Iowa fans and for the Iowa defense to see what Jack Campbell can do. He was nowhere near 100%, but I really think he made some nice plays sideline to sideline, including I think it was a big third down stop.
Yeah, maybe to me, just reading Kirk's quotes, I don't know if I read it differently or maybe Kirk said something different, but yeah, I mean, I thought based on what Kirk said last week that Schulte would be the guy coming back before Campbell. So just to see Jack back, I mean, because you think about Mono, like, I don't want to get too much into the tidbits or
the medical side of things.
Yeah. But he, that's like a tough thing to come back from. Like, that drags you down. I know he wasn't out there for every play, but he still showed a lot of grit, a lot of fight. And I think he's probably the best linebacker right now on this Iowa roster, just the way he's able to cover sideline to sideline. looked really good coming downhill. I thought his pass coverage was really impressive too at times. And there's just a lot to like about Campbell. I mean, we've seen it from Iowa's linebackers. I thought Nick Neiman has been solid in times. Seth Benson has been really, really good. Barrington Wade's obviously had those interceptions. Jessen Jacobs has shown promise from time to time, but we haven't really seen him break out to the player that we expected him to be right now. I still think you got to give him some time, but I think with Campbell back, like, this group is really, really solid. And you could play probably three of those backers consistent snaps with Campbell, Benson, and Neiman.
Sure.
And you could interchange them. And that's a solid group too. I think you can rely on Campbell a little more in the pass coverage than you can Neiman and Benson. But I think Benson's really good at getting downhill and guarding the run, while Campbell's the same deal with it. So yeah, just Campbell, man. Like, he brings a totally different dynamic to the defense. Like, he's kind of gives me the Christian Welch vibes a little bit with just his steadiness and his consistency. And he's not even close to 100%, like you said.
No, and I think the thing about Campbell, I think Campbell has a higher ceiling than Welch. And we're talking about Christian Welch, who's on an NFL roster right now. I remember he was activated by the Baltimore Ravens. But I do think we'll see him in a couple weeks. We'll get a sense of where he's kind of at. But Seth Benson, like you said, I think Seth Benson has really done well swarming the ball. He's been, I think, among the team leaders in tackles over the past 3 weeks. He tied for the team lead with 7 tackles tonight, along with Nick Neiman. But, you know, I think Iowa, for the most part, Sean, I mean, Rashad Bateman had 8 catches for 113 yards and a touchdown. But it really didn't feel like Iowa got beat that badly by Rashad Bateman. And considering that he was targeted almost half of overall throws, I think Iowa held up pretty well for the most part there. But, Sean, flipping from the defense, let's go right to the offense. I think Tyler Goodson had the game I expected him to have. I think you expected him to have as well. Tyler Goodson had a career high 142 yards on 20 total carries, 2 touchdowns, had that 45-yard run to end the third quarter. I think he continues to show he can make something out of nothing. But, Sean, I think we had a lot of questions about how this offensive line would look. We thought it would look improved. But Iowa's offensive line, especially Alaric Jackson, I think Cody Ince showed some good things tonight. But Alaric Jackson, I think, is playing some of his best football of his career. And it's no surprise to see Iowa's run game get going the way it has with the way the offensive line's performed.
Definitely. And you consider the rushing stats. You take out the carries from Petrus and Reganey and Amir Smith-Marset. I believe that Goodson and Sargent, because I did the stat for the by the numbers, I believe they had averaged 8.9, like a little under, like around 8.5 yards per carry, between 7.9 yards per carry for Goodson and Sargent combined. Goodson was 7.1 and Sargent was 9.6, but Goodson had more carries, so that kind of plays into effect a little bit. So that's a really solid. I mean, you have to take into account some of the longer chunk plays that they had on the ground, and that's really promising. That's really good to see. And we knew coming into this game, too, that running the ball was going to be a key. I mean, you think about Minnesota's defense, how bad they've been against the run this year, averaging or allowing like 6 yards per carry, which was last in the Big Ten.
7.3 entering the game, and I think the next closest was 4.9.
Wow. And Iowa averaged 6.7 as a team, and that's taking into account Petrus, Reganey, and Marset on their carries. So that's not even like – Iowa's defense didn't even hit the average of what Minnesota has allowed this year, but they still looked really dominant. Now, I don't know whether that's to give credit to the Iowa offensive line or like maybe downplay a little bit the Minnesota defense as a whole. I mean, having one of their linebackers, Sorry Myron, go out in the first half with the targeting definitely didn't help, because he's more of their guy that they rely on with the run stopping. But still, I mean, it was just a game that you have to dominate, and the Iowa did that. That's really all I can say about it.
No, definitely, Sean. And again, I think you bring up good points. I mean, keep in mind, too, Mekhi Sargent really got going, I think, in the last drive of the game. I think he had 51 of his yards there. He broke away for that 36-yard run before he tapped it in. But I love the play calling by Brian Ferentz. I thought the first couple of drives were scripted really well. Iowa didn't really get a chance to get going in that third quarter due to that 11-minute drive. But there were 35 total run plays to 18 passes. That's about the ratio you wanted to see tonight, I think, Sean. You had to keep them honest with a couple of the pass plays. But Iowa just ground and pound. The offensive line established their dominance. Tyler Goodson got going. Mekhi Sargent made some things happen. I mean, this is what I think you and I talked about earlier in the week, and I think people are kind of harping on, especially after the Northwestern game when Iowa just threw through and through, especially when you have Spencer Petras, we'll get to him in a second, is still trying to get comfortable. He's really trying to get his momentum going, and I still think there's – you know, I think he's excelled in some areas. I think he can manage the team well. I think they do believe in him. But there's a long way to go, I think, in terms of his medium to deep passing. And I think when he threw his interception tonight, Sean, it was going to be an interception, I think, all the way, especially when you looked at the replay. He did not take his eyes off Amir Smith-Marset. Minnesota defense realized that. They pounced on the route, and it just ended up happening the way it did. But again, the 30 yards and penalty really gave Iowa's defense some wiggle room. But like I said, Sean, circling back, Iowa's rushing attack, this is what you wanted to see. Minnesota on average, I think, was giving up 238 yards per game on the ground. Iowa had 235. And again, that's if you take into account the QB kneel at the end, Amir Smith-Marset with a negative 6-yard rush on that jet sweep that was caught in the backfield. And Nico Reganey's 1-yard run, which granted it was a touchdown and Spencer Petras, but this is what you wanted to see. Iowa got the job done in a fashion that I don't think many people expected. I picked them by 2 touchdowns, but I did not expect Iowa to hold Minnesota to single digits just because of Tanner Morgan, Rashad Bateman, and Mohamed Ibrahim.
Yeah, I initially had 30-14, and then I got talked into making my differential a little slimmer. So I had 35-24. But yeah, I mean, I think you look at it offensively too, and just the way the run game has been able to go so far has been really, really, really good. But you look at the passing, and it's like, I know this wasn't really a game where you want the pass to be like a huge focal point. Like, you want to run the ball in these types of games. But I don't want to dwell on the pass too much, but I think if Petras like is more comfortable in the first 1 or 2 games of the season, I think Iowa wins those games just based off how good we've seen the run game be and how solid they were in those games. Like, some of the plays that he could have made, some of the throws that he could have made, I'm sure he knows it, mm-hmm. but he's not focused on that. But like, just think about that. Like, I think if quarterback play was there, I think Iowa would be a 4-0 football team right there. I'm not saying it's not going to be there, but I think if there were some things that were worked out, now you can make an argument for defense, like the way they guard David Bell and all that kind of stuff too. But I think if the offense was there, or quarterback play was there, the passing, the execution in the passing game, I should say, I think Iowa's a 4-0 football team.
And a couple quick notes, Sean, before you keep diving into this. Iowa, with the win tonight, has officially tied the all-time series. It's 42-42 and 2 ties. So that's just something to note for next year if Iowa wants to take the all-time series lead. Tyler Goodson, again, a career-high 142 yards, second straight 100-yard game, third of his career. And with Iowa's blocked field goal, it's Iowa's first blocked field goal since 2017 when Anthony Nelson blocked it against Penn State, which that's just kind of a surprising stat to me because you do think of Iowa taking advantage of some of those, you know, some of those special teams plays to win a couple games, and the fact they haven't blocked one since 2017 is a little bit surprising. Another final stat is Iowa has now recorded an interception in 11 straight games. But, Sean, before we kind of really wrap this up, I wanted to get your take on this. It really seems like Riley Moss, he absorbed some criticism, maybe rightfully so, early in his career, and 4 of his career picks have come against Minnesota. But he's a guy that just continues to produce. I mean, he's made some really good plays, and like, I think you tweeted this, right, that he loves playing against Minnesota, but he continues, I think, to make a big impact on this Iowa team. And for a while, it looked like he was going to return that interception for 6.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think that was probably, I mean, we give him flack, and a lot of people give him flack for just being in the right place, right time for some of his interceptions. I mean, you look at the one against Purdue, the ones against Minnesota in the past, the one last week against Michigan State, I thought that was a good play. I'd have to look back at the one from this game, but it looked like he jumped the pass a little bit and just made a great play on it. So
yeah,
I don't think that's one that you can give him just being like in the right place, right time, or lucky. I think that was just a great overall play, and there's nothing really else to say about it. And I know he gets flack. I mean, I think his positives, the way he's able to play, outweigh the negatives. I know that kind of sounds basic and like, oh, no, duh. But I think you could see him be beat in coverage a couple of times because I think he lacks some of the athleticism that some of these Big Ten receivers have.
Sure.
But I also think his ball skills and the way he's able to really follow the quarterback's eyes says a lot about what kind of player he is, and his length too. Like, he's more lengthy than really he looks a lot lengthier on the football field than he does in real life.
Definitely agree with that.
And that's like, you need a guy like that too that can come up with those plays. I mean, we've seen it with Jack Kerner. I'd like to see
a
little more.
It's the same thing. I think you bring up an excellent point, Sean. It's the fact that how many of his interceptions have just been overthrows, but the reality is if the guy is in the position, you expect him to make the play, and Riley Moss makes the play, and so is Jack Kerner.
Right, and that's his job too, is to play over the top as a safety. So, and he's able to read the quarterback's eyes really well and get over to those spots. And I think you need that, especially with the way that Matt Hankins has played. I think he's still kind of waiting to break out a little bit this year, kind of show what we expected him to be this year. Yeah, I mean, I had another thing in my head, but I completely forgot what I was going to say. It's getting way too late. I woke up at 5 this morning. Like, I don't know what I'm doing.
It's been a long day for you, Sean. But before we kind of wrap this up, we have to talk about the ending of that game with the timeouts. If for some reason you didn't see it, just a quick synopsis. Some Minnesota fans, I think, wrongfully accused Kirk of doing this, Sean. You can't call a timeout. You can't challenge a play in the final 2 minutes. Iowa, they thought, called a timeout to review a play, which was an obvious no catch when they called it a catch. But the booth called the review, didn't charge Iowa a timeout, and then they reversed it. So that set up Minnesota getting within the 10-yard line with, I think there was 19 seconds left or so, Sean, and PJ Fleck called a timeout. And Kirk responded by calling 3 straight timeouts, and the passive aggressiveness was beautiful. And then Kirk, who's not really known for taking, I think, shots at any other team or players or coaches, at least not outright, maybe it's more subtle, but he just said, yeah, we thought we'd take Floyd with us and leave the timeouts there. But, Sean, I mean, I was laughing from my chair. What were you kind of thinking when that whole thing went down?
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was kind of funny. I think the end of the game execution, I see why maybe Minnesota got a little butthurt about, or at least fans did, about Iowa scoring some of those touchdowns. But I also think Kirk kind of delivered it back with the way PJ Fleck called that timeout when Minnesota was driving. I mean, they didn't want to get shut out by Iowa. I think that was pretty clear. And you never want to get shut out, especially against your rival, and especially the way that this Ferentz and Fleck rivalry is kind of gone. I was honestly on the edge of my seat waiting for the post-game handshake at midfield to see what would happen there. But it looked like a pretty casual handshake.
It was quick, to say the least.
Well, let's put it this way. It's kind of like the sideline tough guys. Like, you talk about the internet tough guys, the guys that hide behind the screen, where Kirk and PJ are in separate sidelines, and they kind of do that whole thing. But once they meet each other at midfield, they're kind of like cordial, which I'd imagine that both of them, like, Kirk's kind of like that in a way.
Sure.
But I thought that was definitely – I thought it was pretty funny, not going to lie. I mean, I think the other way, if it happened the other way, Iowa fans would be irate. And, I mean, I see why it's funny, but I think Iowa fans would be absolutely irate if some, if another opposing coach was going to do that. And that's totally fine. Like, yeah, that's perfectly fine. Like, there's, I'm not knocking anyone for enjoying that, but I think if it would have gone the other way, things would have been a lot different on Twitter.
It's one of those things, Sean, where, I mean, this is what you talk about, a rivalry. This is a moment of the rivalry. These things just happen in athletics. So, no, I'm on the same boat as you. I just thought it was really funny. The passive aggressiveness was wonderful. But like you said, I think the obvious reason was they did not want to get shut out. And keep in mind, they kept their first, like you said, they kept their first team out there. They were going against very second, if not third team Iowa defenders. Jay Higgins, the freshman linebacker, was out there. There were a few other freshmen out there, and they just didn't want to.
Yahweh Black, he is a massive
human being, yeah, on that edge too. And I think that was a good move, by the way, by Phil Parker or Kirk or whoever made that call, Sean, because it is his home state. We hadn't seen him in action yet, and I think that was kind of just a maybe one of those subtle cool things that they did for him. But again, he's a guy that I think we've both have said to keep an eye on, and the staff has been incredibly and not very excited about. But it'll be interesting to see what happens tomorrow, Sean. I'm very eager to see how Penn State comes out against Nebraska, maybe get more of a feel on their team. I don't think Penn State's going to drop to 0-4, and I'm excited to kind of get more of a read on their team as Iowa now gets to sit back and relax and enjoy their Saturday before they gear up against the Nittany Lions, who have beaten Iowa 5 straight times. I mean, this is what I talked about before the Michigan State game, Sean, where they have plenty to play for. This is one of those games that can carry momentum in next season. They can get the monkey off their back in terms of that losing streak. But I guess circling back to the start of the podcast, Sean, what's your kind of final take from this Iowa game? What worries you? Where are the strengths? And again, just what are you going to kind of remember from tonight, besides the fact that Torrey Taylor might be a Ray guy front runner?
I think it was too early to judge at the beginning of the season. People were talking about, oh my God, is Iowa going to win a game this year? But I think now you look at the rest of the schedule, and I think it's, unless something, knock on wood, something COVID-related happens, I think there's a legitimate shot for Iowa to go 6-2. But I'm going to play more conservative and go 5-3, but I think 6-2 is definitely a possibility. I think a lot of people would take that after the way things started this season, no doubt in my mind.
No, and I'm in the same boat. I'm in the same realm as you on that too, Sean. I think that a lot of people were very nervous, to say the least, but I think after Iowa's performance against Michigan State, I think even a lot of the national people or the regional people were saying, okay, this Iowa team might be better than the record shows. And I think if you had kind of watched the team, just the week-over-week improvement, I think has been the most impressive thing, Sean, as I've watched this team. The offense looks better. I know Petras, we'll dive more into that early next week after we get a chance to maybe talk to him again, Sean. But we'll see what happens there. But Iowa's run game, Iowa's offensive line has been, I think, dynamic. The defense has been outstanding, especially over the last 2 weeks. But I think right now people should be encouraged by the fact that Iowa continues to get better and better and better each week. But I think that's going to about wrap it up for us tonight, Sean. HawkeyeInsider.com, we'll have plenty of post-game coverage coming to you tomorrow and throughout the weekend. And then starting Monday, we'll get you prepped up for Iowa's matchup against Penn State. Any final words, Sean, before we get out of here?
No, not really. I mean, I want to give a shout-out to Arlen Bruce and Brody Brecht out of Ankeny, two Iowa commits, pulled off a big win tonight against Dowling Catholic, ended their reign as state champions. And we'll play next weekend Southeast Polk, and it's going to be a big, big, big game. Class 4A, that's going to be a fun one. I'm really looking forward to that. And, I mean, tomorrow, too, I'll be at the Unidome to see Iowa 4-star commit Cooper DeJean as they take on Sigourney Kyoto in what should be a really, really fun Class 1A game semifinal. So be on the lookout for that coverage, HawkeyeInsider.com. Look at me on Twitter, SBach247. So coverage, even though Iowa doesn't have a game tomorrow, it doesn't stop. Doesn't stop.
And I guess the very last thing I'll say, by the way, yeah, I mean, I think Arlen Bruce continues to prove his worth and what he's going to bring to the table. I mean, what a difference maker he's been for that team. And I mean, this is the game, Sean, I think all of us have looked forward to, Ankeny versus Southeast Polk. I'm very excited to watch it. But a quick shout out. I'm so mad at myself for forgetting the name, but Montezuma in eight-man football, 108-94. It was Remsen St. Mary's they were playing. The highest scoring playoff game in state history, made national headlines, but I loved every second of it. And it really was just, it was absolutely dynamic. It literally almost broke the scoreboard at the Unidome, Sean, where it had, they couldn't even put three digits on the board, which is hilarious. But yeah, like Sean said, follow us at SBOC247, at David Eicholt, at Hawkeyes on 24/7. We'll have coverage for you the rest of the weekend and early next week as Iowa gets prepped up for Penn State. And be sure to follow us on iTunes, on Spotify, and everything else. And we'll talk to you in a few days. Thanks.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.